Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Chris Churchill, not only a columnist, but the major columnist for the Albany Times Union. Welcome back, Chris Churchill.
Thank you, Alan. Glad to be here.
So a lot has happened recently, and I wanted to get a guy on the show this week who could really explain most of it to us. But Eric Adams now becomes the mayor of New York, at least presumptively. He will have to face Curtis Sliwa, the Red Beret guy. But what do you make of this? Why do you think Eric Adams got elected?
Well, I mean, the obvious answer, the one that most people are pointing to, is he ran on an anti-crime platform, and that seemed to really resonate with people who are worried about rising crime in New York City. I mean, he's a former police captain, also the borough president in Brooklyn, and he was really the candidate who made crime, who talked about it early and talked about it often. And even with Democratic voters, that seemed to really resonate. I mean, there's this idea that, you know, all Democrats are for defunding the police and are anti-police. And I think that he proved that isn't true.
Well, you know, it seems to me that part of getting elected is what's going on the outside. So, for example, a few months ago, everybody was talking about defunding the police, if not mm-hmm. everybody. A lot of people were. And now, of course, we are treated to a spate of crime around the state, including its major cities, including Albany, New York, New York City, and so many other places. So part of winning an election is being in the right place at the right time, is my point.
Yeah, and I think mayor's races in particular are influenced by events on the streets. You know, we've seen races, you know, famously in Chicago in the late 1970s, a blizzard came and the snow wasn't cleared fast enough, and you know, somebody was voted out of office for that. I mean, mayor's races are very responsive to you know, facts on the ground. And one of the facts on the ground is in New York City is rising crime.
And getting the snow off the street, as John Lindsay
Yes, learned. If we'd gotten a snowstorm last week, maybe Eric Adams is, you know, maybe he doesn't resonate as much.
But there's an awful lot going on. One of them is the fact that we're going to get a new district attorney in New York. There's a question as to whether or not that will make a difference in the way in which Donald Trump is either brought to justice or not.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's a wait to be seen type thing. I don't know if it'll make much of a difference or not. You know, I don't know what you think of of the case so far, but you know, I do know a little bit of what you think of the case so far. I know that you see it as a little bit. You were hoping for more charges than what we've seen so far.
They have come up. Yeah, it is interesting. It's fascinating that everybody was sort of waiting. The election, Biden won. It was denied, of course, by Trump. And now we face the way that this is going because a lot of people are disappointed in that the New York City District Attorney's Office, Cy Vance presiding, hasn't come up with more than they've got.
Well, maybe there's nothing there, right? I mean,
is that possible?
Well, that they've found so far, either they haven't dug enough to find something or there just isn't there. I'm sure that they would charge the maximum they could possibly charge, don't you think?
No, I think these guys are all chicken. That's my problem. You know, I think they knew what they wanted to do and should do. And yet Trump is incredibly powerful. I've always felt, Chris, for whatever it's worth, that we know that the Trump organization, Trump, has given money to all kinds of candidates. I'd like to ferret that out and find out what was going on.
Yeah, and if you're wondering why maybe he wasn't prosecuted before he was president, well, maybe that's part of the explanation. But I don't know that that has much to do with the charges we're seeing now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people, it's interesting the reaction to the, and part of me isn't sure how I feel about it. I mean, there is part of me who says to myself, well, he wouldn't be being prosecuted if he had never been president, right? So is this political? Is this a banana republic type prosecution? On the other hand, during his presidency, we saw so much reporting on the kind of the shenanigans of the Trump Organization that I think prosecutors would be kind of willfully turning a blind eye if they ignored all that and would be saying essentially that a president is above the law. So,
well, Chris, let's go from the ex-president of the United States to a present governor. He's been governor for 3 terms now. There's a question as whether he's going to run for a 4th term. There's all kinds of accusations from women and others that he's done wrong.
Which governor are you talking about?
Exactly.
I can't figure it out. It's a puzzle.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Andrew Cuomo, who I have nicknamed years ago as Tough Guy Andrew, is toughing this out. And there's a whole bunch of people who we have to look at and wonder if they knew anything about what they were doing, because we know, for example, Attorney General in New York is almost governor, AG, almost governor. We have an ambitious Attorney General, that's clear. There's a question in my mind as to whether or not she has the guts to take on Andrew Cuomo in a primary election.
Well, I don't know about a primary election, but I think she has the guts to release a report that would be pretty damning. She's already done it on nursing home deaths. That was one of the first, you know, Andrew Cuomo was at this really super high level of popularity coming out of COVID, the pandemic, and she released a report on deaths in nursing homes that said essentially that the governor had been covering up the full total of deaths, and that was one of the first breaks in the dam. And ever since then, it's just been this cascade of bad news for the governor. And now, of course, she's overseeing another investigation into Andrew Cuomo, and this one involving sexual harassment. And I don't think that she'll hesitate to release a damning report if that's where the evidence takes her.
Do you see a possibility that he could be held criminally responsible for anything he's done?
There's the possibility. I don't think it's a likelihood. I think there's a possibility. It gets confusing because you're looking at so many different investigations. There are, you know, federal investigations and the AG's investigation and the assembly investigation. And even for people who think a lot about this stuff, it can be hard to keep them all straight. But there are some financial questions being asked about the payments he received for the book and whether how much that might have influenced some of his decision making. There is the possibility for a criminal, but I think that's a really, really low possibility, to be honest.
So, Chris Churchill, the question then is, what about that book? We know that he's got an advance of $5 million, something like that.
It's not an advance, but he's being paid essentially $5.1
million. Right. I wrote a book about his father and me and Mario.
$7 million you got, right?
A much better book than Andrew's book. And yet, I got Zippo Zero for doing that.
Yeah, well, I like to think, I mean, there's somebody out there is writing the great American novel and can't get it published, right? And if they do get it published, they make maybe 50 cents on the thing. And then here's this rather awful book. I don't know if you suffered through it, but I mean,
it was awful.
Yeah, it was not a good book. It was full of all sorts of deliberate factual errors, like the hiding of the full total of nursing home deaths, but also just bizarre factual errors, like claiming that a building, homeless shelter in Albany had been burned down by protesters when that didn't happen. So there's a lot of problems with the book. And for all these wonderful books out there,
like mine,
to get no money whatsoever, and then it's a little galling, but I guess in a sense that's capitalism, right?
That's the way it is. But of course, the whole point about the book is the concept of people getting money while they're in office. And now we have Liz Krueger. You may remember her. She's saying, wait a second now, we've got to sort of untangle this business about people who are making money while they're in public office.
I do think it's a valid question. And some of the Republicans in the legislature have raised the same question. There is the possibility. I mean, these book publishers are book publishers, but they're also major corporations. And when they give such massive, I mean, they're essentially contributions, right? I mean, they're not campaign contributions, but they're contributions to the governor's wallet. And you have to wonder how much those contributions influence policy.
Sure.
I do think there's a valid question there.
And, you know, Krueger is saying, who I have great respect for, she is saying, you know, we have to sort this out so anybody who's in public office should only be making a certain amount, a limit on how much you can make off of your job.
And the other thing with this, the governor says they are volunteers. They were volunteered to do it.
To help him.
But these are public employees, being paid by the taxpayers who helped him put this book together. I always wonder how I would feel if I were one of those employees and I got paid zilch while the governor got $5.1 million. But at the very least, it raises questions about them. You know, these people are paid by the taxpayers. They shouldn't be helping Andrew Cuomo get rich. That's not what he's elected for.
So in the meantime, Andrew Cuomo, as I said before, Andrew Tough Guy, has come out now, and he's said that we have an emergency situation over guns in New York. What can you tell us about that?
Well, he made this declaration on Tuesday, I believe. And I'm a critic of the governor, but I agree with him that this is an emergency situation.
You mean all the deaths and shootings?
Yeah. When you have children being killed within a few blocks of where we're sitting right now, people, on Quail Street, which is literally four blocks from where we are, a man was shot in the back as he walked back to his job at a convenience store, coming back from praying at a mosque. And I mean, if that's not a state of emergency when innocent people are being killed on your streets, I don't know what is. I don't know, it's easy to declare a state of emergency, and whether or not he has any kind of effective ideas for actually dealing with the problem is maybe a different question. But I do think that the attention he's bringing to the issue is valid and also politically prudent. I mean, we started this conversation talking about Eric Adams. He won the mayor's race because of his focus on crime. And I think Governor Cuomo, looking ahead to his own reelection, is certainly aware that the Republicans will try to make crime an issue that could be effective against him.
Well, do you feel, Chris Churchill, that we have any way of taking guns off our streets based on what you've been seeing?
I think it's really difficult. Obviously, if it could be done easily, it could be. But I do think there are measures. These are illegal guns, right? This isn't a Second Amendment issue. This isn't a rights issue. The governor has been talking about kind of trying to intercept the guns as they come into New York State. I think that's difficult. But there are things that can be done, like cracking down on, I think, straw man purchases, things like that, that could have some effect. The USA Today did a series of articles recently pointing out that even gun dealers who are caught doing things wrong are hardly punished. Well, that can change. And then the Biden administration could be part of the effort to change that.
And yet, Chris Churchill, think about this. We know that people who are in prison are more black and brown than they are white. And there is this whole idea about reforming our prisons and our sentencing and our law so things get evened out. And one of those ways is if you can afford bail, you're okay. If you can't afford bail, you're in prison for a long time waiting for trial.
Yeah, and New York has reformed its bail system. And there are Republicans who would like to draw a connection between the rise in violence and bail reform. I think that's a dubious connection for a whole lot of reasons, including the fact that this rise in gun violence is happening nationally. It's not a New York issue alone. It's not an Albany or Buffalo or New York City issue alone. It's happening in states that have not enacted bail reform. So there's something bigger going on than just what a local municipality or state is doing.
It's interesting. The mayors of Rochester and Buffalo, but not in Albany, were ousted in the primary this year. You wrote about it. What do you make of what happened? Why does Albany never get rid of its mayors?
Well, the Rochester situation, I think, is just, the mayor there has her own issues, that led to her defeat. Every mayor's race is a different situation. I think you can say clearly that voters in New York City and in Buffalo voted for change. New York City, de Blasio is the incumbent, a very progressive Democrat, and they're going for a much more moderate Democrat. In Buffalo, it was almost the exact opposite, where semi-socialist was, But clearly, in both situations, there was a little bit of unhappiness with the status quo. And, Albany, we're talking about the city of Albany, not state government. Albany just hangs on to its incumbents.
It does.
And there was one in particular who was famously there for, four plus decades.
Yeah.
It would be good for the city if the mayoral elections, I think, were a little more vibrant. I think a debate on the issues is always a good thing, especially when you're talking about things like crime and poverty. And no matter what you think of Kathy Sheehan, who's the current mayor, I think she should be forced to defend her record. And she really wasn't. I mean, she just, barely had an opponent, didn't have a serious opponent, and won't have one in the general election.
And that's the way, as you point out, it is in Albany.
It's the way it almost always is. And it's a shame. It is a shame.
Yeah. What about the Republican Party? Is there still a Republican Party in New York State?
There is one. Sure.
Well, sure. I mean, you wouldn't know.
Is there a viable one? That might be a different question, right?
Yeah.
I mean, do they have a real chance at winning the governor's race? I don't really think so.
They've lost both houses of the legislature by a lot.
Yeah.
The governor's a Democrat. In my very good state, Chris Churchill of Massachusetts.
I was just going to raise that, yeah.
A very blue state.
Yeah.
We regularly elect Republican governors, even though it's as blue as you can get.
Yeah, and then the same is true of some other states around here. Vermont, and you know, mm-hmm. would be one of them. New Jersey has had Republican governors in recent memory. The Massachusetts example, the party nominates moderates, right? They recognize what the electorate is, and they respond to that. In New York, for some reason, there's this kind of doubling down. Lee Zeldin is the presumptive nominee for governor, and he's a very Trumpy guy who voted against certifying election results after the Capitol riot.
Why would they do that? Why would the Republicans
that's a good question.
Pick somebody who just can't win in anti-Trump New York?
I don't know.
I'll tell you why, because they're scared of Trump. And they're scared if they don't do what he tells them to and have a Trump-like candidate, they're in trouble.
Well, why be scared of him? Wouldn't you rather win than just? I mean, what can he do to them, really? I mean, I think they're not necessarily scared of Trump. I think they're scared of their base, which in parts of rural New York, you know, the Adirondacks, places like that, is very Trumpy. And it's possible if you had a primary and you have put a Trumpy candidate, a Zeldin or a Stefanik up against Astorino,
yeah,
somebody like that, that the Trumpy candidate would win. But I think they're shooting themselves in the foot. I think Cuomo is vulnerable to the right candidate.
Do you see such a right candidate?
No.
If I put a gun at your head and said, give me a right candidate that the Republicans could nominate and who could win.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough at the moment because Trump is it's so vivid a memory for many New Yorkers. And there's just kind of a negative feeling about the Republican Party. But I would say, if you could find a wealthy businessman who is moderate on social issues and fiscally conservative, somebody like that.
So a Bloomberg.
Yeah, sure. Somebody in that mode, I think, you know, somebody who's not directly tied to, I think Mark Molinaro would be somebody who could have a chance. A Chris Gibson, somebody like that. A Republican who has been Trump skeptical, I guess is the way I would put it.
I'm glad you raised Chris Gibson because I know him quite well. I love the guy. He's now the president of a college.
Siena College.
Yeah. And he wanted to run for governor.
Yeah.
And he went around and he asked all the major leaders of the Republican Party around New York State, will you pick me? And they all said, no, we want the usual bum who represents us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know for Chris Gibson and a lot of these candidates, the big issue is money. They have to raise to successfully take on Cuomo, especially when you don't have name recognition. You have to raise a lot of money. And you know, do they want to do that? Do they want to put the time and effort into doing that? I'm not sure. It's a daunting prospect. You know, I mean, how would you like to have you do the fund drives? How would you like to raise $30 million in a short amount of time? You know, that's not an easy task.
I could do it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you should run for governor.
What do you make, Chris Churchill, of the North Country Congresswoman Elise Stefanik becoming a Trump darling? She was a moderate when she started, pushing the big lie. Is there any way of getting her out of politics? After all, that's a very red Republican district.
Yeah, Elise Stefanik is one of the more fascinating stories probably in politics anywhere in the country, right? I mean, she started out as a very a Republican in the George W. Bush, Mitt Romney mold. And, you know, some would call her a neocon if they wanted to criticize her. And that was probably a valid criticism. And she was very Trump skeptical. I mean, she endorsed him in 2016 without saying his name. Mm. You know, she didn't want to sully her lips with the man's name. And yet, you know, 4 years later, she's the Trumpiest Republican out there. And I think in some sense, she's responding to the sentiment in her district, you know, the North Country Adirondack region. And I think in some sense, she realized the direction the party was going, and she decided she was going to ride that wave. Now, that wave could come crashing. You know, we don't know where this is all going to end up, and it could end up, and I think it would be healthy for the party, for the Republican Party, if, you know, Trumpism was kind of discredited and the people who had really championed Trump were kind of washed out of the party, you know. But to this point, it has benefited her.
Don't we have bad names for people who change, you know, their
politics?
Yeah, we do,
but flip-flopping and all that sort of thing. Yeah. But they all do it, right?
That wasn't the name I was thinking of.
What was the name you were going to think?
I'm not going there.
So, yeah, we do have bad names for it, but to a degree, all politicians do it, right? I mean, and then you get into the question of, well, how authentic a person. I mean, if you started out your political career as one thing and now you're something entirely different, it does raise questions about what you really believe, or do you believe in anything except your own power?
There are many people who think that now that Mike Pence is out of contention, that when Trump runs the next time, he's going to bring Stefanik, a young woman, on with him as his VP candidate.
You think Pence is out of contention?
I do.
I don't.
Why not?
Because of what I just said, there is the possibility that Trumpism is discredited, that enough people within the party see it as a bad direction. And you could argue that Pence wouldn't be the person they would turn to, but he may be well enough positioned as someone who kind of had a foot in both camps that he who knows? In a crowded field, I think he could get a good number of votes, even today.
Let's put it this way. We're recording this interview on July 7th, and you can write it down. Pence ain't going to be the gonna be the candidate.
What was the other thing? I think I wrote something else down.
You were writing other things down.
Yeah.
Did I say?
Well, oh. I'll write it down that I think he might be.
That's good. That's why we love having you. Yeah. That's why we love having you on our radio programs, because you take a view that is not always what everybody else is thinking.
I mean, all the candidates, all the potential Republican nominees are dealing with how to handle the Trump. You know, Nikki Haley, Mike Pence, they're all... They're not sure where to land on this. And, you know, at the moment, the Trump base is very fervent and very dedicated, and they may only want Trump. So it's not at all clear that kind of excitement, for lack of a better word, could be translated into a different candidate.
Chris Churchill, you know, we have ethics boards in New York State, which is supposed to ride herd on governors and legislators and others. We call them J. Cope, and some people call them J. Joke. And they usually, the people who are serving on them are put there by the people, including Governor Cuomo, who has to be judged by them. Is there ever a way we can have some true ethics reform in New York State?
Well, that's an excellent question. I mean, you can start by just electing ethical candidates. I mean, I know that's kind of simplistic and maybe naive, but I mean, it's a start. Other states do manage it. We don't have to have the system that we have now. How we get there, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, a system where the ethics board is appointed by the people who are behaving unethically is not a good system, obviously.
So let me go back to Andrew Cuomo. I just did. Yeah, right. But will he run for governor again if he survives all of these investigations?
Yeah, he will. I think he'll probably win. I at this moment, I wrote a newsletter last week saying I don't see how he loses. And I know there was a Siena poll last week that showed some real vulnerability. And I think, you know, most New Yorkers would prefer, quote unquote, somebody else.
That's right.
But who's that somebody else, right? That we've already discussed how Lee Zeldin is probably not that somebody else. And you know, there's no way, you know, he would motivate a Trumpy candidate would motivate the Democratic base and really, you know, help Cuomo out. So then you're looking at, well, does he lose? Does somebody run? Does a different Democrat run and defeat him in the primary? And I don't see a name at the moment that really jumps out at me as somebody who would beat him in a primary. Now, all that can change if the investigation by Tish James into sexual harassment is damning and really does him damage. And I mean, it's possible that could wound him so badly that there's no way he can run. But again, we don't know that's going to happen at this point.
Well, you know, Chris Churchill, people have been surprised by certain things that end up happening. So it depends. I mean, we may well see somebody running, as you said before, who is a businessman, who's a moderate Republican, and people who said that they don't want another Cuomo term might just turn around and do what they have to do in order to get rid of him.
And, you know, I know you've raised the prospect of like a Tom DiNapoli running, right?
Yeah, I love Tom DiNapoli. Let me just tell you my prejudice. He's a wonderful controller. He's a great guy. And he's my favorite New York State politician. But we would not call him charismatic.
Right, but that actually might be a strength, right? I mean, if you're dealing with a governor that people just don't like, a blank, you know, as that polling shows, you know, someone else, a blank slate might be just the way to go. And Tom DiNapoli isn't exactly a blank slate, but he's not somebody that most New Yorkers know very well.
No.
The Siena polls show that most people don't know much about him at all, if they even recognize his name.
Right.
Which raises the question of you'd have to raise a lot of money to take on Cuomo. But it also, that could be a strength. And he does have a long record of public service and a fairly distinguished, you know, controversy-free for the most part. I mean, I think he could be an interesting candidate. I don't know if he really wants to, though.
How important do newspaper endorsements count in all of this?
I have no idea. I know the candidates want
them.
Well,
you're a columnist. You're supposed to have an idea.
Well, yeah. I have an idea about a lot of things, but I don't know. It's difficult to measure. I mean, candidates want them, right? And they come in and they seek them, so they must mean something. And we just went through a New York mayor's race where Eric Adams was really championed by the New York Post, and I think...
Yeah, but not by the New York Times.
Not by the New York Times, but the woman who finished second, Catherine Garcia, was endorsed by the Times.
She was.
So, I mean, that would suggest that the two most read papers, and I think that's accurate at this point, that the Daily News...
When you say read, you don't mean communist. You mean...
But anyways, two prominent newspapers, and the two candidates endorsed by two prominent newspapers went the farthest. I mean, that suggests that those endorsements meant something, especially the Garcia
endorsement.
I'm not sure that...
She was nowhere before the Times endorsed her.
Yeah, I mean, the Times, the candidates they endorsed didn't do very well. But in this case, I mean, and Catherine Garcia became kind of the candidate of Manhattan.
That's right.
Of the Manhattan, quote-unquote, elite. And I think the New York Times is the newspaper of the Manhattan, quote-unquote, elite. So it's easy to draw a connection there.
As usual, you couldn't be more right, Chris Churchill. We're out of time. Our guest has been Chris Churchill, the columnist for the Albany Times-Union. You can read his work at timesunion.com. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.